Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What's going on, everybody? And welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, May 26th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. And we've got a busy one for you. Rich Hill, the guy is just phenomenal. We'll get it right here at the top. Worryometer, 2 months in. This is usually the time where Scott says, all right, we've got some data. Now it's time to make some decisions. So we will have some decisions for you later on in the podcast. Tuesday recap, fantasy justice for all. But first, Scott, what is up with baseball players always suffering the weirdest injuries? I get it. They're human. They're like anybody else. But I feel like more than any other sport, you just hear the wildest stuff all the time. I think Jabba Chamberlain broke his foot on a trampoline once. Last year, Zach Wheeler sliced his finger open. He lacerated his finger because he got it caught in his pants zipper. Like, what is going on? Zach, please,
John
Zach.
John Smoltz burnt his stomach ironing a shirt that he was wearing. I remember somebody, too, sneezed too hard.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it was, Sammy Sosa. I can't remember exactly who. I mean, it may not have been Sammy Sosa, but it was somebody.
All right, so in case you didn't hear, Zach Plesac fractured his thumb, his pitching thumb on his right hand, aggressively putting his shirt on, and he hit it on a chair that was next to his locker, apparently. So it was just the way that it was phrased.
It was taking his shirt off.
Taking his shirt off.
He wasn't putting his aggressively taking his shirt off.
It's just
as opposed to I don't know, passively taking his shirt off. The way you would think anybody would normally take their shirt off. I don't know. I saw a line from I think it was the Twins broadcast. I don't think I've aggressively undressed in years. And I think that's probably the right angle for a joke for this. But anyway.
Now I want to research the Twins broadcast team.
For what it's worth, I think it was after a game, right? It wasn't after or before something else. But anyway. I don't know. I don't know what to do other than laugh at it. I mean, I'm kind of relieved that I don't have to keep putting Zach Plesac in my lineup because he wasn't. It's unclear whether he was more helpful than hurtful.
Yeah, it has been an inconsistent year, no doubt about it, for Zach Plesac, pitching a lot to contact. I haven't really seen a timetable for something like this, so I guess we'll go with the old, what is it, Scott, 4 to 6 weeks?
Yeah.
every injury is 4 to 6 weeks if you don't have a timetable?
Or, I don't know, is it 6 to 8 weeks? It's 4 to 6 weeks, yeah. Okay. 4 to 6 weeks. And not non-displaced fracture, not something that's going to require surgery. 4 to 6 weeks.
Jesus Lizardo, another one. He broke his hand, slamming it down on a table, losing in a video game.
How do we forget about that one? What was the wording that was used initially?
He bumped it hard.
You know, the kid breaks the window and he's like, I barely touched it.
Oh, man, it's just it's ridiculous. But there you go. Top of the podcast. Zach Plesac, just another interesting baseball injury and a long list of them in the history of our great sport.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right. Some Tuesday standouts, Scott. I know where you want to start. Hit me, baby, one more time. Britney Spears.
Richo. Yeah. We got to talk about Rockin' Rich again, who had arguably the best start of his career today. He set a career high for strikeouts with 13. He set a career high for swinging strikes with 27. And the thing is, I mean, as good as he's been about getting strikeouts over the years, he hasn't been a big swinging strike guy. That's not how he's gotten him. So I don't know. I was watching, I didn't actually see the game, but I was watching a clip of all 13 of his strikeouts. He looked like he was having so much fun. So much fun at age 41. And it's been a really nice stretch here for Rich Hill. Five of his past six starts, six innings or more. He allowed two earned runs in these eight innings against the Royals. So his ERA during that six-start stretch actually went up because of those two earned runs allowed. In those six starts, he now has a 1.26 ERA, 0.79 whip, and 11.1 Ks per nine. And again, five of the six starts were six innings plus. So Rich Hill isn't just must roster at this point. I think he's verging on must start. And I know there are probably some pretty deep pitching staffs in there, out there, particularly in shallower leagues. I mean, I look at who's in the 60 range in my rankings. I mean, Rich Hill's barely, I barely got him inside my top 60 after this performance. So I understand. I'm not ready to go as far as to say he's must start in all formats, no matter what, but he's getting pretty close and he's still available in 25% of CBS Sports leagues. I'm sure he's probably available in like 60% of Yahoo leagues. So Rich Hill, he's still a thing. He's still, we shouldn't have quit on him, Frank. We shouldn't have quit on him after 2020. He let us down.
Well, as one listener pointed out, just hop on a player 1 year after Scott's really excited about that player, right? So you were all in on Rich Hill last year, and this is the year. It just, the way these things work out for Tampa too, it's like they trade away Blake Snell. Look what Blake Tampa Snell too is doing.
Tony Dungy defense.
They bring in Rich Hill. They reinvigorate his career. Not everything works out perfectly for Tampa, but a lot of things they do are pretty well calculated and really strong moves there from Tampa Bay. So yeah, 75% roster for Rich Hill. If he's available, even in your shallower 10-team, 8-team leagues, make sure you get him on your team, verging on a must-start starting pitcher. Scott, I'll just ask the question. I don't really know that there's going to be much trade value for Rich Hill. It's the same thing that I brought up with Yuli Gurriel the other day, last week rather. It's, okay, sure, I guess if you can sell high, try, but I can't see many people interested in trading for Rich Hill right now. The reason I will bring it up is because I think it's an interesting juxtaposition to someone like Corey Kluber, who is also up there in age, has had his injury history, and as we'll talk about, he left with shoulder discomfort on Tuesday. So, I mean, Rich Hill is over 40. Something like that can easily happen. So, what do you think about trying to shop him if you can?
Well, I just, you know, I get all excited about what just happened, and you got to say, now let's get rid of him.
No, I got to ask the question.
I don't think it's ever a bad idea to shop a player.
Sure. That's it? I mean,
Sense. I mean, like, look, I don't know. What would it actually take for me to trade Rich Hill? Probably nothing that I expect to be offered.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because he was just picked up. You know, I might go to the person who has the very worst pitching staff in your league, or I don't know, has struggling to find a good starting pitcher and maybe see what he can part with and maybe it'll be more useful to you. But yeah, I don't see getting like a haul for Hill.
Yeah, no,
that's what you're thinking.
I would agree with that. It's just, I thought I would bring it up because kind of a similar situation to how well Corey Kluber was pitching. Rich Hill is 61% rostered in Yahoo League, so very widely available there as well. For me, oh my goodness gracious, Josh Bell. The guy, he's kind of coming around. There's something happening right now with Josh Bell. Two more hits on Tuesday, another home run, and now in the month of May, he is batting .294 with four home runs and a 25% strikeout rate. Mind you, that comes with a ground ball rate that is still over 50%. You look at his StatCast page, he's making a lot of hard contact, but a lot of it is still going into the ground. So that is an issue for him, but I like that the strikeout rate is coming down. And also, I like the fact that this home run came off of Amir Garrett. Not that it's the hardest thing to hit a home run off of Amir Garrett this season, but Josh Bell typically struggles mightily against lefties. Even though he's a switch hitter, he's not great against left-handed pitching. He has been platooning with Ryan Zimmerman in that way for most of the season. So I think he's going to still continue to sit out here and there, but signs of life here from Josh Bell. And I did, every time he hits a home run, I check out the Nationals broadcast. They always play this song, and I actually love it. So I think anytime Josh Bell does anything, we'll kind of bring this up right here. That's a great song. It's hilarious. And by the famous Anita Ward. So shout out there. Scott, anything that you would like to add on Josh Bell? Look up his roster rate. He might have been dropped in some shallower leagues, but looks like he's coming
around. I was surprised to see he's up at 89.
Okay. So people kept the faith.
I'm shocked. I thought I was the only one in the world who was keeping the faith on Josh. Well, maybe you too, but who's keeping the faith on Josh Bell. And even I dropped him in a league or two where I just couldn't justify the bench spot on him anymore. So, you know, maybe nobody's paying. No, then people are paying attention. Obviously, Rich Hill's up to 75% rostership. But yeah, I guess they kept the faith on Bell. And yeah, like you, I noticed that the strikeouts in the last 2 weeks have been much lower for pretty much the full extent of Josh Bell's career. He's been a low strikeout guy. So it's been really weird. You know, I understand you look at that 2019 season and it looks like the outlier in terms of overall production, but 2020 and the start of 2021, that's the outlier in terms of strikeouts. That hasn't historically been Josh Bell's problem. So hopefully he's getting back to being good again.
For sure. Yeah, I have him in probably my most important league, my NFBC main event. So I do watch him closely, and I'm rooting for him to come around because of that. And he has so far in May. So hopefully he can keep that up throughout the summer months as well. I did want to give an honorable mention here, a shout out just here at the top for to Steven Matz, who had his best start of the season at the Yankees, 6 2/3, 6 hits, 1 run, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts with 16 swinging strikes on 112 pitches. They let him go in this one. He averaged a season high 90.2 miles per hour on his slider, which typically averages around 88 miles per hour for the season. Did allow 8 hard hit balls, but I noticed the ERA is 4.28. That comes with a 3.44 xFIP. So Steven Matz is kind of an interesting pitcher. It seems like based on the stuff that he has, he should get more whiffs than he actually does. He really doesn't get that many swinging strikes or strikeouts for that matter. But he was very good on Tuesday against the Yankees. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add there, Scott, but he was awesome.
Two of his past 3 starts have been really good. 9 strikeouts in 5 innings 2 turns ago, and then a 5-run, 10-hit outing in between. So you got to love that kind of consistency. He's actually rostered in more than 80% of leagues, too. I looked into him to write about him in waiver wire tonight, and I can't. He's too rostered.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'd rather have Rich Hill than Matz by a pretty substantial margin.
Agreed.
So maybe their rostership percentages need to flip-flop there. But yeah, I don't know. He's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think he's better this year than what we've seen the past couple of seasons, but probably still someone that you just want to play the matchups with, especially when he's on the road. I mean, he was pitching in Dunedin. Now he's going to go to Buffalo, where that's expected to be a hitter's park as well. So play the matchups there with Steven Matz, but a great start from him. The Champions League final is set as Manchester City take on Chelsea in the biggest soccer match of the year, and the Que Golazo podcast has you covered. Luis Miguel Echegaray welcomes soccer experts. I'm sorry if I ruined your name, man. I just butchered that. Soccer experts every single episode to give game predictions, betting tips, players to watch, post-match analysis, and much, much more. Find Que Golazo wherever you are listening to this show and on YouTube too. The UCL final is here and Que Golazo has you covered. All right. Lots of news and notes. A lot more injuries outside of Zach Plesac, of course, on Tuesday. Bryce Harper was finally placed on the IL with a left forearm contusion one day after Joe Girardi said he wasn't hurt. It especially sucks that it's one day into the scoring period and that the Phillies played on Monday. So
yeah,
you couldn't even get him out of your lineup. It's annoying.
Joe Girardi said he was intentionally withholding that information for strategic purposes.
I get it. Whatever. It's fine. It's just...
It sucks for fantasy. That's not a joke.
No. I mean, I understand why managers would do that, and they lie all the time. I mean, we see that, you know, talk about it constantly, but it just sucks. Finally, Adalberto Mondesi was in the lineup. He returned to the Royals. He was batting seventh. He finished 2-for-4 with 2 doubles and 2 strikeouts. Jacob deGrom made his return to the mound against the Rockies. 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 0 walks with 9 strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on just 63 pitches. So they were easing him in here. Fastball velocity looked perfectly fine. He averaged 99.4 miles per hour on his fastball. We had a bunch of players leave with injury on Tuesday. Corey Kluber, tightness in his right shoulder. Marcell Ozuna injured his left hand on a slide at third base. Nico Hoerner exited his game with a hamstring injury. There's not really anything we can add about the Kluber situation right now, Scott, because he's going for an MRI, but he suffered a shoulder injury last year. And I'm not just saying this because it's the Yankees, whatever, but it was an awesome story. I mean, the guy's coming off a no-hitter and turning his career around after years of being hurt. So it just sucks to see Corey Kluber go down. And I'd imagine this is probably going to require at least an IL stint, but that's just my speculation.
Probably. It might not be a major injury, shoulder tightness. We'll see what the MRI turns up. It's just too early to say. But in any case, even in a best case scenario, it seems like it would behoove the Yankees to skip him a turn.
And I looked into Davey Garcia to see how he was doing at AAA. It's real bad. He's walking a lot of guys. So I don't think that they're, even if they need someone, they'll probably just go with like bullpen games for now until Davey Garcia gets back on track. So I don't think he's going to be an option for them, at least in the foreseeable future. Jazz Chisholm suffered a mild ankle sprain on Tuesday. Cody Bellinger has homered in 2 of his last 3 rehab games. Kyle Gibson was placed on the IL out of nowhere with a right groin strain, a reliever prospect, and a favorite of mine. DeMarcus Evans was recalled for the Texas Rangers. He could be the closer of the future. It's probably not going to happen anytime soon because Ian Kennedy has been amazing, but maybe if they trade Ian Kennedy, I guess that would make sense somewhere around the trade deadline. Evans has phenomenal strikeout stuff, but he also walks everybody. So just a name to remember there, DeMarcus Evans. Noah Syndergaard was removed from Tuesday's rehab start with right elbow soreness. Ruh-roh, that doesn't sound too good there for Syndergaard. Brian Anderson.
Yep. More on Syndergaard, though. He will have an MRI on that elbow, but the Mets don't seem overly concerned. That's what was put out there.
It's like, how do you digest anything, right, that the Mets say? It seemed like Carrasco was right around the corner from returning in like early May. He's moved to the 60-day IL. Now he's not back until July. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I hope he's all right because I have him stashed in a few leagues. But yeah, it's a little scary coming back from Tommy John surgery. Brian Anderson was placed on the IL with a left shoulder subluxation. John Birdie started at third base and is 8% rostered for those of you who need speed in deeper category leagues. Harrison Bader was placed on the IL with a right rib hairline fracture. Kenta Maeda could miss more than the 10-day minimum on the IL with the Twins. Tyler O'Neill is expected to be activated sometime during the Cardinals' current road trip, which lasts until June 2nd. DJ LeMahieu was placed on the paternity list. Luke Voit is expected to miss this weekend's series against the Tigers. He's got a baby on the way. Kyle Freeland was activated off the IL and started against the Mets. He went for, I think he led like 2 runs. He was fine. I don't think he's really a name to pay attention to right now. Manny Machado and Nelson Cruz both remained out for their respective teams. Wilson Contreras was out of the lineup, but x-rays on his wrist were negative. He was hit by a Craig Kimbrell fastball while catching on Sunday. Jorge Polanco and Max Kepler returned to the lineup for the Twins. Michael Brantley was out due to leg soreness. All right, Scott, let's fire it up. The worryometer. Can we drop any of these players? Probably not the first one, but we're just about 2 months in. And I know that normally around Memorial Day that's the time. That's the time when we start making some decisions here, Scott. So let's start off with Anthony Rendon. Again, I don't think you're dropping Anthony Rendon. He went 0-for-3 again on Tuesday. He's batting .227 with a .662 OPS. The underlying numbers are very bad. He's striking out more, still not a lot. It's 19%. And he's hitting a lot of fly balls. So 2 IL stints so far this year, Scott. Your worryometer for Anthony Rendon.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's just, you know, kind of a failure to launch situation because of those 2 IL stints. I don't think he's really had a chance to get in a groove yet, but we obviously know how good he is, very consistent from year to year. I was updating my rankings earlier today, and I kept him ahead of
was
somebody really good.
Nolan Arenado, was it?
I don't remember. I'm sorry. I took this angle. But yeah, no, I didn't lower him is the point. And yeah, don't drop him.
You kept him ahead of, it looks
Maximilian Muncy. That's who I kept him ahead of.
Max Muncy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So look, we're not dropping Anthony Rendon. Did you give a number, worryometer, 1 to 10?
2.
2 on Anthony. All right. So he's potentially a buy low candidate right now if you can make that happen. Turn around one of these overperforming middle-aged starting pitchers and, I don't know, maybe add someone else lower for Anthony Rendon if you could pull it off. How about Eugenio Suarez? He did hit his 10th home run on Tuesday, but he added 3 more strikeouts. He is batting at 150 with a 34% strikeout rate. The quality of contact way down for Suarez this year. 187 expected batting average. That is in the bottom 3% in all of baseball. Worryometer, Scott. Eugenio Suarez.
I will go 7. 7 on the worryometer for Eugenio. I actually did move him down, finally, this week. He is now 17th at third base for me. He's behind Austin Riley. I moved Matt Chapman down, too, for what it's worth. But
We'll get to Chapman. Don't you worry.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. It's just like, how long can you bat 160, you know? I don't doubt the power's there, but I don't know. Did you share these stats already? He has 2 hits in his past 7 games.
I did not, but that's pretty bad.
Both of them home runs. It wouldn't surprise me if he got hot and we were all picking him back up again, but I think in shallower leagues, like 250-ish players rostered, I think you probably let him go.
Yeah, he's 94% rostered. I think in anything with a corner and a middle infielder, your standard roto lineups, 5 outfielders, utility bat, 12 teams are deeper, I think you got to hold Suarez unless there's someone great on your waiver wire. If Austin Riley is available, sure, I would make that swap. I would drop Eugenio Suarez for him, but I don't know how realistic that is at this point. And it's like, once you get past him, there's not a ton of waiver wire options that might be available for you. So it's, are you really going to drop Eugenio Suarez for Evan Longoria or Jamer Candelario?
Right.
I don't know. Probably not. It just doesn't really move the needle there for me. So I'm worried about him, but again, it depends who you could drop him for. Brandon Lau does have 9 home runs, but he's also batting .204. He's doing so with a .230 xBA, .472 xSlug, so not as bad as some of the other players we've talked about here. Struggling mightily against left-handed pitching, a .375 OPS in 57 plate appearances for Brandon Lau. Where are you at? Worryometer on him, Scott.
Well, probably only like a 5, maybe, because I considered him, you know, a step back from Suarez to begin with. So that factors into the different grades there. But he's kind of started to pick it up here over the past week or so. 3 home runs, .276 batting average over his past 8 games. And we know that he runs really hot and really cold. So I'm expecting him to have this power surge here very soon. It might be difficult to time in terms of whether you have him in your lineup or not, but I do think it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Would you drop him for someone like Gavin Lux or Ty France if they were available?
No, I would not.
Okay, so mostly we're holding Brandon Lau.
Yeah.
Okay, how about Zach Greinke, who was up against his former team, the Dodgers, on Tuesday? He allowed 4 runs over 6 innings, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, only 5 swinging strikes on 88 pitches, and he's got a 3.97 ERA, 4.00 xFIP, so underlying numbers are kind of right in line there with Zach Greinke, and it's just, you know, in the pitching climate this season, that's just not a quality pitcher. You know, maybe in years past, it could have been passable, but... all these pitchers are performing way above what Greinke is doing right now. And he's got a 9.3% swinging strike rate, his lowest since 2012. Scott, your worryometer on Zach Greinke?
Only like a 3. I do wonder if he's declined just enough that he's going to be merely above average instead of great. But there's been no thought to me dropping him or even sitting him. Maybe there's been some thought to sitting him at times, but not that often. I know offense has been way up in it's mostly normalized. The home run rate itself hasn't normalized. The home run rate is similar to 2018, which is still high for like the context of our whole lives. But low for the juiced ball era. That the home run rate has held steady from April to May. So that it looks like that's just the home run rate now, what it was in 2018, basically. But offense as a whole has looked much closer to normal in May. Specifically like the BABIP. Remember the BABIP was crazy low in April. And we were kind of freaking out about that. But it's gone up like 13 points in May, which is a huge jump from 1 month to the next. And it's basically what it normally is in May. I actually went back a few years and noticed BABIP tends to go up every month until September when it drops back down, which clearly links it to temperature, right? And May was, and this year's April this year was unseasonably cold. So maybe it makes sense that the BABIP was outrageously low, but it hasn't been in May. And so offense as a whole has been up. I'm going to look into ERA because I think the ERA in May is around like 420, 421, something like that. So I'm going to look and see how that compares since you brought it up. Since you brought it up, Frank.
Yeah, fair enough. While offense has been up in May, it has not been for this player, Matt Chapman, who is batting .211 with a .676 OPS. And part of the reason why I had him in my bus column coming into the season, Scott, is because he had hip surgery in the offseason, and I thought he could get off to a slow start and it would affect his overall numbers, and thus far that's been the case. Now, you know, maybe it's taking him a couple of months to get back into form coming off of that injury where he just kind of takes off from June throughout the rest of the season. But it hasn't been the case so far. So what do you think, Scott? Worryometer on Matt Chapman.
Yeah, I will say, I'll say like a 5 for him too. I dragged him down my rankings along with Eugenio Suarez, but he doesn't seem broken as intensely as Suarez does. I don't know. I have a little more hope for Chapman. I just don't feel like, I feel like I'd be avoiding starting him now if I at all could.
He's 95% rostered. Similarly to Suarez, it's just not a position where there's a ton of talent available right now. But are there any leagues where you should consider dropping Matt Chapman?
It just depends what's out there. Is he somebody who, if you're in a league shallow enough that Austin Riley is still available, can you probably get away with dropping Chapman? Yes, you probably can. But in most leagues, you probably can't.
Mm-hmm. And for Chapman, he's got a 32% strikeout rate.
Yeah, that's so high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last year it was high, but I think that was probably because he was playing through injury. It was 35% right last year, but then
it was a pretty severe surgery he had. Maybe he's not fully recovered. I thought it would impact his power more than anything else.
And it has. His home run to fly ball ratio is 10%, and for his career it's 16%. So
I might need to look at that again. Maybe I was right to move him down with Suarez. Maybe he is as broken as Suarez.
And I think for good reason, again, because of the injury and his quality of contact, at least according to Fangraphs, which is what I have up here, 25% hard contact rate this season for Chapman, 41% for his career. So way down compared to what we're used to seeing. Justin Turner.
Yeah, so let me give you the ERA number.
Sure.
So it's over 420 for May, but that's season long. The last time there was an ERA as low as 420 for the league-wide ERA was that same year, 2018. It was actually 415 for the season. Last year it was 445 in 2019, which was the height of the juiced ball era. It was 451. So yeah, I mean, an ERA around 4 is not going to be very good if May is the standard. Now, the league-wide ERA is probably going to be higher in June. It's probably going to be higher in July and August. It's probably going to go up the same way BABIP does from month to month. So, you know, in the end, the ERA, the league-wide ERA might be closer to like 4.25 or something, but it is going to be lower than the past 2 years anyway.
And with the league average ERA going up, Zach Greinke's might go with it. So I guess that's something.
Yeah, I might. I'd bet against that. I think he gets better as opposed to worse from here, but it might.
Let's hit a few more players. Justin Turner went 2-for-5 with his 8th home run, but coming into Tuesday, he was batting 179 with a 534 OPS in May. And we did tell people, you know, the first couple of weeks of the season, try and sell high on Justin Turner because he's a little bit older, obviously. So your worryometer on him, Scott?
I don't know that I'm worried necessarily for... Yeah, I mean, clearly he was performing at an unsustainable pace early on, and I think he's pretty fringy compared to, you know, Suarez and Chapman. We assumed were going to be must-start players. Turner a little below that. But I have moved Suarez and Chapman behind Turner in my rest of season rankings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't go out and drop Turner. I think it's just kind of he's slowing down. He's kind of regressing closer to the mean, which is, mm-hmm. you know, perfectly fine. He was never going to continue to bat 350 or whatever it was for the entire season there. So just natural regression coming here for Justin Turner. How about Eddie Rosario? He went 2-for-4 on Tuesday, but is batting a paltry 226 with a 602 OPS. And his quality of contact is way down. So I don't know if this is something that's a little bit more related to the ball and the fact that, you know, a lot of home runs the past couple of years are taking a step back and kind of turning into fly ball outs. But I feel like that might happen for someone like Eddie Rosario, who doesn't typically hit the ball all that hard, Scott. So what's your worryometer on him?
Yeah, I've been slow to move him down because we've seen, like, we saw a lot of hitters dramatically improve their production in May versus April. I put a list of 42 on the site in an article I wrote. It just went up on the site Tuesday. 42. Huge difference in their numbers from April to May. And, you know, as I mentioned already, league-wide BABIP went up a crazy amount from April to May. And it goes up pretty consistently every year. It goes up as the months get hotter. And the biggest jump is May to June. So I would want to hold out on most every struggling hitter just with that in mind, that the biggest jump in league-wide BABIP is normally May to June. Now you're talking home run rate for Eddie Rosario, which is, of course, independent from BABIP. But I think it's a fine theory you bring up. I'm just not ready. I just don't know that I'm ready to act on it yet, especially given that he is so good at making contact for somebody who's shown, you know, useful power in the past.
Yep. The home run to fly ball ratio for Eddie Rosario this season is 6.3%. That has been over 15% each of the past two seasons. So even if it doesn't get back to that number, I mean, this is really low compared to his career average of 13% home run to fly ball ratio for Eddie Rosario. So I do think better years are coming, and he's running a lot more with Cleveland.
Running more.
He's got 5 steals, and his career high is 11, which he did as a rookie back in 2015. So he's on pace to shatter that. So we shall see. We're not dropping Eddie Rosario anywhere, right?
No, I can't imagine doing that outside of something really shallow. I think I still have him in my top 30 outfielders for the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm. I could
certainly
see
top 40.
Maybe you do it in like a 10-team points league with 3 outfielders, but even then, it's a little shaky. I don't know that I would.
Right.
How about Jack Flaherty, who we really haven't talked much about recently, but David Moore actually emailed in. Shout out to David Moore. He kind of put me on this, and he opened my eyes to the underlying numbers for Jack Flaherty, which are not very good. Flaherty was at the White Sox on Tuesday. He allowed 7 runs. Only 3 of those were earned, so some questionable defense there behind him. He only lasted 3 2/3, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. He also had 2 wild pitches and 2 hit-by-pitches. And he's got a 2.84 ERA, fine, but that comes with a 4.09 xFIP, 4.12 expected ERA. His home run to fly ball ratio for Flaherty, 9%. That's 14% for his career. So I guess we kind of assume that will regress closer to his career mark. His first pitch strike percentage and swinging strike rate are both career lows as well. And he's had a favorable schedule. He's faced the Pirates twice, the Brewers, the Rockies on the road, and the Marlins. So worryometer, Scott, on Jack Flaherty, should we be trying to sell high on him, which we haven't really talked about?
I think some of those rates that you're talking about were influenced from early in the season. He was not at his usual velocity for his first several starts, and I was kind of concerned about that. But that's improved here recently, and it looks like the swinging strike rate over his past five starts is, well, not counting tonight, but the previous five starts was pretty closer to what's normal for Jack Flaherty. And it was a really good stretch. In those five starts, he had a 169 ERA. The whip was below one for those five starts. Yeah, my worryometer is pretty much one for Flaherty.
Okay. So keeping the faith there with Jack Flaherty. Last one I'll ask you about. Alec Bohm is batting .212 with a .567 OPS. He's got a 28% strikeout rate and a 52% ground ball rate. We spoke about a few third basemen already. I think he's probably even a little bit further down the rankings than Eugenio Suarez and Matt Chapman, but Alec Bohm has struggled mightily, Scott.
Yes, he has. And if you'll remember back prior to the season, one of the great annoyances for me was that Alec Bohm was going about 50 spots earlier than Ke'Bryan Hayes on average, when, you know, he wasn't up that much longer than Hayes in 2020, and his production was certainly worse. And in particular, the fact he had only four home runs in 160 at-bats, like, that didn't seem like it was going to cut it from a corner infielder. And he had a .410 BABIP fueling the high batting average he had. Well, he doesn't have a .410 BABIP this year. And his strikeout rate is, you know, it was 20% last year. It's closer to 30% this year. Like, basically, the things he did do well as a rookie, he's not doing well anymore. And he hasn't improved in the areas that weren't so great, like the power hitting. So I think Bohm, in our podcast league, a 12-team points league, I drafted him as my starting third baseman. I've since dropped him. Now, I did have Josh Donaldson also on my roster, who I could start at third base, so, you know, that factored into the decision, obviously. But bottom line is, if Bohm is the best you're doing at third base, you need an upgrade somehow.
Yeah. If you play in a deeper lineup with a corner infielder, I'm probably holding Bohm. Maybe you keep him on the bench for now and just kind of play the hot hand. The underlying numbers for him are still better. He's got a .265 expected batting average, .439 expected slug. He is hitting way too many ground balls, and plate discipline was kind of one of Bohm's calling cards in the minors, and it was last year. That hasn't been the case this year. Strikeouts are up, and he does not walk very much. It's right around a 5% walk rate. So I think better days are coming, but maybe not as great as many people thought coming into the season. Again, that is Alec Bohm. We are going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to take a look at some Tuesday mashers, some home runs from Tuesday. I want to talk about Aaron Savale's trade value. We'll do that next on Fantasy Baseball Today. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn.
All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Some home runs that were hit on Tuesday. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I feel like this is just a daily custom now. We'll talk about however many home runs he has the next day. Vlad Jr., two hits, including his 16th home run of the season. His teammate, Lourdes Gurriel, is one of those players that has heated up in the month of May. Two hits, including his fourth home run. He has multiple hits in seven of his last nine games. Shohei Ohtani, he's been a little quiet recently. Hit his 15th home run on Tuesday with a 117-mile-per-hour exit velocity. It was just a screaming line drive right down the line, and it was pretty impressive. Jared Walsh had two more hits. His 11th home run, it came off of a left-handed pitcher. Adolis Garcia, 15th home run of the season, now has 40 RBI. I will put you on the spot here, Scott, while I try and fill the space here and pull up your outfield rankings, but have you moved Garcia up those rankings?
Yeah, I moved him up quite a bit. I mentioned on the podcast 2 days ago that I'm starting to come around to him. The strikeouts have been going down, and he just seems to keep getting better and better. I don't think he's going to... What kind of pace is he on? He's on pace for close to 50 homers, right? I don't think he's going to be able to keep up a 50 homer, 18 steal pace or whatever he's on. He's bound to regress from there. But I do think the odds are better than not that he will remain a must-start player rest of season. Mm-hmm.
Scott moved Adolis Garcia up to outfielder 31, and Chris moved Garcia all the way up to outfield 24. Ahead of Jesse.
I had him higher than that, honestly.
Yeah. This isn't head-to-head. I think in Roto you have him at 29, Scott, so a little bit higher there. Chris has Adolis Garcia ahead of Jesse Winker. I'm going to have a talk with him about that tomorrow because I don't know. I don't know about that. Jock Peterson had a double dong on Tuesday. He is now batting .369 in 17 games since returning from the IL. He is 35% rostered, and it looks like he has seven games on the schedule for next week. So write him down, Scott. Write him on a notepad. He might be a sleeper hitter for next week.
Yeah, Jock Peterson. It might depend how many lefties they're facing in those seven games. He doesn't always sit against lefties, but he does a lot. And
he's been leading off for the Cubs, and he's hot. He's making a good amount of contact this year. And we kind of
375 he's batting in May. Now these two home runs were just his second and third home runs of the month. It had been a lot of singles, but sometimes that's kind of how it started for Austin Riley. You get some of those batted balls to land, and then the power comes. So we certainly know Peterson has a lot of that.
How much higher should this roster rate be, Scott? It's 35% right now.
I could see it doubling.
Okay. It up there to 70.
Yeah. I don't see a big difference between like Peterson and Kyle Schwarber. I guess Schwarber is going to play a little more regularly.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah. Jock Peterson, he's hot. Go get him. So let's talk about Aaron Civale and his trade value. I'm also going to bring up Joe Musgrove. We'll talk about them two together as potential trade candidates. But for Civale, another great start at the Tigers. 8 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts, 10 swinging strikes on 104 pitches. The control has gotten back on track for Civale, which is huge for him. Just 3 walks over his last 3 starts. He has now gone 6-plus innings in 8 of 10 starts. So I think he's going to give you volume. In a quality start league, he does have more value. In a points league, he does have more value as well. The bad news in the start against the Tigers, mind you, 11 hard hit balls. He's got a 3.04 ERA and a 4.09 xFIP. He's a top 20 starting pitcher right now, Scott, in both formats so far with Aaron Civale. I still think that we should be trying to sell high on him, but again, the key word is high. I'm just trying to figure out what can we get back in return for Civale. Would you try to trade him for those hitters I mentioned earlier, or would you shoot higher than that?
Oh, shoot higher than that.
Okay.
No, I think you should be marketing Civale like a borderline ace, because that's what his numbers so far this year look like. Yeah, you need to aim higher than that. Like you need to aim for like Kyle Tucker, the buy low candidate we always refer to. Even though his main numbers are great, his season long numbers, he's still batting something like 220. The main numbers haven't been good enough to normalize the season long numbers. So, I think he remains a buy low, and yes, somebody you could target with Civale. But that's kind of the range of hitter, you know, assuming we're doing a pitcher for hitter thing, that I'd aim for with Civale, because, you know, Savali's, if you end up stuck with him, I don't think it's such a bad thing. I do think he's going to get worse from here. He has a 409 xFIP and also a 396 FIP. It's not like the home run rate is especially low, those two numbers being so close together. Now, they are influenced probably by him having an uncharacteristically high number of walks there early in the season. I think the ERA is going to be more like mid threes than right around three like it is right now. Mm-hmm. And him being not such a great strikeout pitcher. Yeah. Him being not such a great strikeout pitcher. That's obviously, then that makes it even worse when he has an ERA up there, but it's still good enough that you're going to start him more often than not.
Do you think you can get somebody like DJ LeMahieu or Rendon for Civale, or would you have to add to him to pull that off?
I think you could try it. You know, it really just depends. Part of the problem with naming a very specific trade target is really the starting point when you're looking to trade somebody is who in your league has their need met by acquiring this guy, because you need to make the trade like that. That's the starting point when I go to make a trade. Who could use this player the most? And then I look on their roster to see who would be a suitable return. So, you know, if you're bringing Civale to the guy who has LeMahieu and his pitching staff is stacked, obviously that's not going anywhere, or at least it most likely isn't.
Yep.
So that you got to keep that in mind. But yeah, you know, you try with just Civale, and if you have to add more to it for a hitter that high end, I think it's worth adding a little more.
Scott, how about Joe Musgrove? I don't like the season long numbers are great. 2.26 ERA. All the underlying numbers look great. He's got a 2.48 xFIP. The expected ERA a little bit higher, 3.43 there for Musgrove. So he's allowed some harder contact than you would like to see, but he has now gone five innings or less in five of his last six starts. Mind you, last time out before Tuesday, he was amazing. I think it was like 11 strikeouts over seven innings pitched. But the volume has been kind of weird for Joe Musgrove in terms of how deep he's going into his starts.
Yeah, because that was something he was always good at.
Yeah.
That did not seem like the concern for Joe Musgrove coming into this season. It was just how effective would he be. It's been frustrating. That's the word I'd use to describe it. Today, he brought a no-hitter into the, or I should say Tuesday, he brought a no-hitter into the fifth inning, but then loaded the bases, and I think that's why he got pulled. Like, you look at the line, and like, why would they take him out when he didn't even go five? You know, he's only allowed a few base runners, was striking out a bunch of guys. And it's just because it happened to all come at once, and so, you know, they didn't want the game to fall apart right there. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a season-long issue for him. I think his track record suggests it won't be. I think it's just kind of a weird stretch he's going through right now. And obviously, he made me feel a lot better after that last start, as dominant as it was, that he's still, you know, the signs of a breakthrough that Musgrove was showing earlier are still intact. Just needs to start going beyond five innings.
Yep. And I was watching that start because it was of interest to me. It was Joe Musgrove against Corbin Burns. So obviously it's a really fun pitching matchup there. And he walked Corbin Burns, the opposing pitcher, on four pitches to load the bases. And I think he had 84 pitches at that point. Colton Wong was coming up with the bases loaded. So they opted to go to the lefty reliever and Tim Hill, lefty on lefty matchup there against Colton Wong. So that's why he was pulled a little bit earlier than you're used to seeing, because obviously it was a matchup thing there for him, but just walking the opposing pitcher on four pitches, he didn't have it that inning. So I think that's why they pulled him a little bit early. The buy low window is now closed, Scott, on Charlie Morton. I hope you bought while you could, because he went into Boston, which not the easiest place to pitch against that lineup. And he allowed just one unearned run with nine strikeouts over seven innings pitched, 16 swinging strikes on 103 pitches. That's two straight quality starts with 17 strikeouts to just two walks during that span. So not really much else to add here, but Morton looks like he's back.
Just five hits and 13 innings over those two starts too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he looks like he's dominating, and we all expected him to bounce back. So yay for us.
The shout out to the Padres. They are running wild this season. They had six more steals as a team on Tuesday. They are first in baseball by far. They have 56 steals as a team. That's 21 more than the Kansas City Royals. Now, that number's probably going to get closer now that Adalberto Mondesi is back. But one of those steals came from Jurickson Profar, and I just wanted to show him some love, Scott, because he has 11 hits with three steals over his last eight games since returning from the COVID IL, and the Padres are dealing with injuries. Trent Grisham on the IL, Manny Machado's banged up. Jurickson Profar is only 37% rostered. He has first, second, and outfield eligibility. So I think if you need steals, Profar is someone that you could look at.
Yeah, maybe. He has one home run, though, and is slugging .328. So he's hit for some power in the past. He had a decent home run total for the short season last year, but he doesn't impact the ball very hard. And like, I'm so much offense is generated with power that I'm just hesitant to start anybody at this point, even like my 15 team leagues that I don't think is going to provide me power. It's not like Profar is this proven 40 steal guy, so you never know when he's going to stop running too. Like, you may have already, kind of like with Ramon Laureano, right? Like, he had all those steals in April and then just stopped running in May. Something that happens. So yeah, I can't really get excited about Profar.
I hear you on the steal thing. It's like, it could just start and stop at any point, but this team philosophy with the Padres, they just let their guys run. So I would trust in them a little bit more than other teams. And again, this is like a deeper format thing. He's 37% rostered, so he's widely available. Again, the name there, Jurickson Profar, if you are in need of some steals. Not much power there. Any interest in these three starting pitchers, Scott, who all pitched on Tuesday? Vince Velasquez, six shutout against the Marlins. He's 16% rostered. Tarek Skubal had nine strikeouts, two runs allowed over five innings against Cleveland. And Brad Keller, who was at the Rays, he allowed one run with seven strikeouts over seven innings pitched. All three of these pitchers are 32% rostered or less.
So the one I'm least interested in is Vince Velasquez, even though he's on a nice run here. Three combined earned runs and four May starts for Vince Velasquez. I don't really see what's changed for him other than not allowing runs, you know? So I'm skeptical of it. Really skeptical of that one. The one I'm most interested in is Tarek Skubal, who I think is really beginning to put it together. I know Chris has noticed it as well. So nine strikeouts in five innings in this start for Skubal. And I believe he had nine strikeouts in five innings in his last start too. Yeah. So he's been using his secondary pitches a lot more. And in these last two starts, the sliders really played up. But he's also shown more ability with the changeup. Remember, the knock on Skubal coming into the season was the fastball really seemed to be the only pitch that was doing him any good. But that seems to be changing. And if we can get him to go longer than five innings, we could really be onto something. So Skubal's pretty interesting. Keller, yeah, it looks like Keller's gotten back on track, but I don't think Brad Keller was ever going to be any more or less than Brad Keller. And
don't do it. That's my advice. Don't do it.
What that means is he's probably just a streamer type, somebody who stands out mostly for his workload. So that's where he is, and I think that's where he's always been.
There was a lot more action that happened on Tuesday. What else did I want to highlight from this? Lucas Giolito, this is now, I believe it's two starts in a row where he's looked pretty damn good, got back on track, 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts, 0 walks. A huge key for Giolito is limiting the walks. He had 14 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. 8 of those came on the slider. So super encouraging there for him. And then Logan Gilbert, I guess, had his best start of the season. It still wasn't great, but 4 innings, 2 runs, 0 walks, 4 strikeouts. The biggest issue for him, Scott, when I watch, is he has a hard time commanding his breaking pitches. He had just 1 called strike on 36 breaking pitches. So his slider and curveball combined, that's been the biggest thing for me, is he just can't really locate those right now.
Oh my gosh. I just saw Rafael Montero get saved for the Mariners. Now I know Kendall Graveman's on the COVID IL. I don't think it's been confirmed whether he actually is sick himself, because there's other reasons you could go on that IL. But Keenan Middleton got the save yesterday. And I think Montero worked like the 6th or something. And that was like the 3rd appearance in a row where he's worked prior to the 8th, much less the 9th. So I thought they were done with this Rafael Montero thing. Actually, in my 2014 Dynasty League, I dropped Montero and picked up Keenan Middleton. Here they are going right back to Montero. I don't know if Middleton needed the day off. I mean, Montero allowed 2 hits, so it wasn't pretty. It's been annoying. That's been an annoying closer scenario, the Mariners.
Oh, yes. Very annoying, which is a great segue into our call to the pen. Some bullpen updates. Keenan Middleton had only pitched 1 time in the past 3 days, it looks like, coming into. So I guess he could have been available. He should have been available. Another very annoying bullpen. The Cincinnati Reds looked like we finally had a normal save chance. TJ Antone recorded 8 outs across the 6th through 8th inning. He relieved Tyler Malley, who started the game. Amir Garrett started the 9th to face Juan Soto, Josh Bell, and Kyle Schwarber, who they pinch hit for. He recorded 2 outs. He allowed a solo home run to Josh Bell. And then Lucas Sims got the final out against Starlin Castro for his 2nd save. I think it's just a mix and match, play the matchups. If Malley gave them more length, Antone might have just pitched the final 3 innings for the save, honestly. So,
yeah, he might have. We haven't known who the Reds closer is for like a month and a half now, since Garrett lost the job in early April. And I was wondering if David Bell would go back to Garrett, because in May, prior to this appearance, where, you know, the only thing Garrett allowed was a solo home run, it's worth pointing out, but in 6 May appearances, he had allowed no runs, 10 strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings, 2 hits, 2 walks. It looked like Amir Garrett had gotten back on track. So I was thinking they might go back to him. I suspect he would have finished the inning if he didn't allow that home run, right? But he did allow it. So Sims came in. Yeah, this is the Reds bullpen. I think only the Diamondbacks bullpen right now, I feel like I know less about what the team is doing than the Reds bullpen.
For Cleveland, Aaron Civale allowed the first 2 runners to reach in the 9th inning. And then James Karinchak came in. He allowed an RBI single, but picked up his 6th save of the season. For the Royals, Josh Staumont was unavailable. Kyle Zimmer got his 2nd save. And it seems like...
Was Staumont unavailable? I was looking for that.
I believe he had pitched a bunch recently.
He had gotten 2 days off in a row.
Actually, yeah, you're right. So he pitched on the 22nd, he pitched on the 19th, the 18th, the 15th, and the 14th. So he has been used a lot over the past 10 days-ish. But, I mean, by definition, yeah, you're right. Staumont should have been available.
Yeah, that was weird. Now, Kyle Zimmer had been on the IL for like a month with a shoulder strain. This was his 3rd appearance since returning. His numbers are pretty good. I think they had a left-hander coming up in the top of the 9th, so maybe it made sense to stick with Jake Brents, who's a left-hander. He was pitching the 8th, and then bring in, and then if they're not going to go the full inning, maybe they don't want to warm up Stalmont. I don't know. I mean, I still think Stalmont's the front runner there. I'm not really picking up, not really thinking about picking up Kyle Zimmer, except in like an AL only league. But it's reason to wonder if changes are afoot in Kansas City.
Yeah, Josh Stalmont has done nothing to lose the job, technically. It was weird.
He's been kind of shaky. He hasn't been blowing saves, but he's been kind of shaky.
For the Twins, another one. Yeah, Hansel Robles is the guy, right? Nope. He was using the 7th to face 2, 3, and 4 in the lineup. Alex Colome came in the 8th, and Taylor Rogers was used in the 9th. He picked up his 3rd save of the season.
He actually came in for 1 out in the 8th, Rogers, and then finished it out. But yeah, I had a feeling this might happen because Hansel Robles, he actually did blow a save Sunday and was shaky the previous outing too, and just didn't lock down the role, I think, the way the Twins were hoping for. So I'm thinking Taylor Rogers is the front runner there again.
For the Cubs, Craig Kimbrell got his 10th save. For the Phillies, Hector Neris got his 8th. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz got his 8th. And for the Braves, Will Smith got his 8th. A lot of 8th saves on Tuesday. To stream or not to stream for Wednesday, we will kick it off with Johnny Cueto at the Diamondbacks, Merrill Kelly versus the Giants, Luis Garcia versus the Dodgers, Griffin Canning versus the Rangers, James Kaprielian versus the Mariners, and John Gant at the White Sox.
All right, so I got to remember what I said yesterday. I think Kaprielian was the easy one, then Griffin Canning, and then Luis Garcia if you have to.
On Thursday, we have Antonio Senzatella at the Mets, Spencer Howard at the Marlins, Tyler Anderson versus the Cubs, Brady Singer at the Rays, Shane McClanahan versus the Royals, and Chris Flexen versus the Rangers.
McClanahan against the Royals seems fine. He has gone 5+ in back-to-back outings, I think. Not really wild about any of the others, but let's see, you're going to force me to use somebody? Maybe his opponent there, Brady Singer, against the Rays, maybe?
Yeah, it's tough because the Rays are so hot right now.
They're so hot right now. So unlike Hansel. You're so hot right now. Yeah. Spencer Howard against the Marlins. Did you mention him? That's kind of interesting, but you just don't know if he's going to be built up enough to go the minimum for a win. Yeah, it's pretty yucky, Frank. Pretty yucky slate there on Thursday if you're looking to stream a pitcher. Mm-hmm.
I like McClanahan, probably Brady Singer, and, oh man, famous last words, but Antonio Senzatella on the road.
I thought you were going to go there. Against that Mets AAA lineup.
The Mets are so bad right now, man. So I guess you go with Antonio Senzatella. We don't have enough time to get to your fantasy justice question, so I apologize. And thank you for all the emails that you've been sending in. I see them. I answer them a lot of them personally. So I know we haven't answered a lot of your questions recently here on the podcast, but we will get to your fantasy justice questions at some point throughout the rest of the week. I've got some Apple Podcast review questions that we will get to. Continue to email us. I will answer those personally as well. For Scott and Frank, thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.